This podcast is a presentation of University of California Television. Like what you hear? Consider making a donation at uctv.tv/donate so we can continue to bring you more great programs.
Thank you, everyone, and welcome to this virtual Q&A. Thank you to all of you, those of you in the theater. We are glad that you are here with us this evening. I would also like to extend a special thank you to Emily Zinn, Tyler Morgenstern, and the dedicated team at the Carsey Wolf Center and here in the Pollock Theater. And a big shout out to those in the booth who helped us troubleshoot some technical issues this evening. Thank you all. So my name is Stephanie Malia Hom. I am a professor of Transnational Italian Studies in the Department of French and Italian here at UCSB. And it is my absolute pleasure to welcome filmmakers Daphne Di Cinto and Medine Paulos here to UCSB virtually. We are so happy to have you here this evening and to have screened both of your films. And I just wanted to say a quick word before we delve into the Q&A that Emily's wonderful introduction brought up in her land acknowledgement of that here at UCSB, we sit on Chumash lands. And this is a reminder of the presence of colonialism in our everyday life. And I know in the film Asmarina, we saw this reminder, this the after effects, the ongoing effects of Italian colonial rule among Eritrean diaspora in Milan. And also it brought up questions of race and blackness in the way that those concepts are understood in Italy, where Daphne, your film Il Moro brought up these questions as they were understood in Italy in the past during the Renaissance. And these are stories that are unfamiliar to many of us, particularly here in the US, but also to Italians in Italy. And it's with films like yours that we help to call attention to these histories and to these stories and to help elevate the conversations around them. So with that, I'll begin with my first question to both of you is, what inspired you to make your films?
Hello, everybody. Thank you, Stephanie, and thank you, everybody at UCSB for having us tonight. Okay, inspiration. The inspiration for me came when I found out about the details of the story of Alessandro de' Medici. As an Italian, you study the Medici family throughout your formative years. And the chapter in Alessandro is always a little bit skipped or skimmed through. And yes, you know, you will know that Alessandro de' Medici is the first Duke of Florence. Well, you probably won't know because teachers don't know, because people in Florence don't know, people at the Council of Florence don't know, is that Alessandro de' Medici was Afro-Italian. So, of course, you can imagine my face when I find this article that lists him as Afro-Italian. My first reaction was, well, it's not true, because I would have known. And when I actually delved in and found the details about this background that is not talked of, and also when I found an incredible story that surrounds this character, a story that that encloses other characters, from, you know, more well-known ones to the least talked about, like Alessandro's mom, I thought it was paramount to bring this these visuals to a screen. We live in a society that defines itself through images. And if when I grew up, I kept on hearing that people like me didn't exist, people that looked like me didn't exist in the history of my country, I definitely didn't want another generation to go through school without knowing that people that look like me also existed in the history of my country and of my continent. So I thought that bringing this story to life was important on so many different levels.
My terms?
Yes.
Not too much of a difference in my answer. Let's say my inspiration to, or my initial inspiration to start working on Asmarina, or to deciding to make a film out of all the material that I had already collected over many years, came from a sort of generalized national amnesia that went against directly against what was my everyday experience, right? And what I was listening to growing up, hanging around cafes and bars, listening to adults telling stories of the Eritrean struggle, or Eritrean culture, and everything that was in direct connection with a part of Italian history. But I would only have half of the story. And that silence made me realize that there was some work to do. Also, just like Daphne was saying, the lack of recognizing yourself in the society, or in the history books, let me know that it was time for us to start telling our own stories. And I also took in a lot of inspiration from some a group of elderly women, which are in Italian are called le mundine, rice withers, that I had the fortune, the chance to work with when I was much, much younger. And seeing them telling their stories, their life experiences, with such pride, giving so much value to what they had been through, first, firsthand, gave me the courage to give the same value to the stories connected to my own family and to my own community.
Very good. So, I know for both of these films are bringing to light stories that aren't necessarily in circulation in popular culture, or and both of your films represent stories of Italians of African descent. And in your opinion, what do they have to teach us about the ways in which race and blackness were and are understood in Italy, both in the past, in the Renaissance, as well as in contemporary Italy today?
Go ahead.
Well, Asmarina came out before the Moor, but obviously Alessandro de' Medici came before the Eritrean Ethiopian diaspora in Italy, and specifically Milan. So for me, the way, if I were to put this to stories and films in conversation, I would want to hope that the people depicted in Asmarina would take strength and inspiration and validity and officiality from knowing that the story of Alessandro de' Medici existed. That's the idea, right? To go into history, to go into the archive and dismantling what it is and what it has been so far, and insert ourselves and go in there and highlight all those stories, learn to read between the lines, so we know that the contribution of Afro Italians, diasporic people in Europe, but specifically in Italy, they're not new. Our contribution had been there for a long time, had been happening for years and years and years and generations. And so what that would mean for kids of immigrants today, it would simply mean to not feel as guests in the country where they were born, and to have this more strength and feel more empowered to then fight for what their rights are supposed to be, including the fight for citizenship rights.
The fight for citizenship rights is something that has been always in front of me as I and central to, you know, my thought process as I was writing the model. I think it's important to mention, you know, kind of following your question, how race didn't have in the 1500s the same connotation that it has for us today. If you do notice, in Il Moro, not once race is mentioned, not once anybody tells Alessandro, your problem is your skin color. What I found incredibly powerful about that story was the parallel between Alessandro's story and our stories today. And so, as Medin said, the minute somebody, anybody who's featured in As Marina can watch Il Moro and go, wait a second, it is not, what I've been told is not true. This legitimizes my presence. My history legitimizes my presence in my country. Not only that, but Alessandro de' Medici is just one of many characters of African descent that we will find in the history of Italy and in the history of Europe. The more we can have them in the forefront of our minds and in our vision, in the eye of our mind, the more conversations that or justifications about Afro-Italian or Afro-European presence in the continent won't have to happen. If we can raise a generation that goes to school and learns about Alessandro de' Medici and learns how he looked like and learns about Settimio Severo and about the popes of African descent that we had, about the freedom fighters that we had during World War II, we will have a generation that doesn't question whether Italian people can be black or not. And when it comes to citizenship, the fact, you know, that an Italian person born and raised will not be granted or recognized citizenship on the basis that both their parents are immigrants is mind-blowing in 2024. The fact that there are kids that have to go throughout their childhood and teenage years without having a passport and without having the same opportunities that everybody else have, because there are decisions that you can't take without citizenship, decisions about your future that you are not allowed to take, you know, starting from what I want to study at university. Because of course, if I want to go into a job that requires, as you know, for example, law that requires a bar exam, you can't take that without citizenship. These decisions are important. And they also, they go to build the foundational blocks of identities that are being formed in those years. You have to wait up until you're 18 years old to apply for citizenship, and citizenship is not given to you automatically. There's a lot you have to prove, and the process is excruciating and many times dehumanizing. Given all of this and putting all these characters that exist in our history right next to this situation, I think that the question we need to ask ourselves is, if Alessandro de' Medici in the 1500s could be the first Duke of Florence, why are we still having this conversation today?
Thank you. And for those in the audience who are unfamiliar with Italy's citizenship laws, Italy adheres to a jus sanguinis, or citizenship by blood or kinship, rather than jus solis, which is citizenship by soil, which we have here in the United States, where citizenship is conferred upon birth in in the country. And as both Daphne and Medine were saying, you get these very strange, almost Kafka-esque bureaucratic situations where a person who was born and raised in Italy to immigrant parents has no claim to citizenship, where someone, say, in the United States or Brazil, who has a great-great-grandfather who is an Italian immigrant, can claim Italian citizenship. And so, what's so powerful about your films is that they are legitimating the presence of people where the state is not, you know. And so, I wanted to ask too. One of the things that your stories tell are the stories, Daphne, your story is a very Florentine story. It's very Tuscan. And Medine, your story was very much centered in Milan as well as in Bologna, a northern story. And I was curious about the way in which Italy's strong sense of regional identity shapes views of Afro-Italianness. Is there a difference in between north and south, between urban and rural, between the different cities that you were working in? Turn it over to you.
I mean, I believe there might be some Italians in the crowd, and so maybe they might agree or disagree with me. But in my personal experience, I have noticed over the years that one of the questions posed to Italians of other descent, not just Afro-Italians, is basically what it means to be an Italian, right? So it's put upon us to make sense of Italian ident national identity. And we all know the history of Italian diversity, right? I believe that where you find Italianness, so to speak, is in the regions, is in the smaller centers, in the cities, more than in the country. I know very few people, regardless of their background, that would self-identify as Italian in a general sense. Typically, people say, mention their hometown, right? And yeah, I feel like that is in direct connection. Well, in my case, I told the story of a specific community, the Eritrean Ethiopian, both of them, because in Italy is they're kind of meshed. I told the story of a specific community, and so that I feel like there was a sort of a connection in that sense. It's in a way easier to self-identify, but yourself with a specific place, you know, instead of this almost fictional place, right? I don't know. I'm thinking about your question as I answer your question. What do you think, Daphne?
I think that regionalism plays such a strong part in Italian identity. But first of all, like before having the conversation around second generations, we have to have the conversation about that split, the north and south split in, you know, in Italianness and in Italy, and how the concept of other and of othering has followed the progression of how this split has been experienced and viewed throughout the decades. And if you know, a few decades ago, northern Italians were looking at southern Italians and calling them degrading names and telling them to go back home, like they weren't in their nation. I think it's just really interesting to see who, you know, every 5 to 10 years has taken that place to be othered. And this, I think, you know, is just a foundational conversation when we talk about regionalism in Italy, but kind of then linking it to the conversation around Afro-Italians and second generations, I think that a lot of individuals feel strongly about how much the region they grew up influenced them. I am thinking specifically of two singers. One is Velade, who has written this song called Afro Sarda, so Afro Sardinian. And there's another artist whose name I can't recall right now, but he wrote this song called Afro Siciliano. And, you know, even just that speaks to what it meant to grow up in that specific place. If I have to share, you know, some personal experiences, the only place that I've ever been asked, are you from here in Italy, has been Sicily. And I am not Sicilian, I'm from the north. And I am from a tiny town in the middle of nowhere in northern Italy. That experience is very different from the one you had in Milan, Medin. I safe to say. And I think, you know, the conversation about how we grew up differently, because you did grow up around a more numerous community, and I literally grew up with my mom. and she was doing everything she could to fit in. So she was abandoning a lot of her own background that she didn't pass on to me and that I had to look for on my own. Regionalism plays, I think, a really big role in the formation of these identities and of the stories that come out of them.
I think we also respond to different needs, and it shows in the way, in the terminology that we use. For example, Daphne, you were saying, you're mentioning somebody that self-identify as Afro-Sicilian or Afro-Sardinian. So to me, that speaks to the need to assert your connection to a specific place, right? A specific region. And that Afro part is a more of a wanting to highlight a connection to Africanness beyond your specific community, you know? So to keep it smaller, Africanness around the country, you know, the communities that are African communities that are represented in Italy. But going beyond that, it also talks to, it keeps us in conversation with Africanness in around the globe. And of course, especially looking at the US, right? We always, Black people around the world, we always look towards Black US. and that, in fact, the term Afro-Italian, Afro-European, we use it because Afro-American already existed. And it's a way of keeping that connection open, of recognize making ourselves part of that conversation, of that movement as well. And it speaks to the fact that there are two needs at the same time. You have to look to yourself, you try to look to yourself and your identity, you try to zoom in as much as possible, but also you try to keep a transnational conversation going. The needs are both, and typically often at the same time.
You articulated that very well, Medine, this idea that there's this ongoing balance or readjusting between regional and transnational, and you know, this toggling constantly as identity is being negotiated. And I think one of the through lines in both of your works is looking at not just identity, but also the importance of history. And the fact that historical and cultural connections between Europe and Africa, as well as with the US, as you were saying, whether these connections were in the 21st century or back in the Renaissance, they could be seen as mutually constitutive. And there's one quote in Asmarina from Elena who says, I'm paraphrasing here, without us, and she's referring to the Eritrean diaspora, without us, Italy would not be what it is today. Italy would not be what it is today with us, and we wouldn't be us without Italy. And can you say more about your approach to representing history in these films? Because, of course, Alessandro de' Medici was an historical figure, and Medine, you're dealing with this history of Italian colonialism as well as the ongoing effects of that experience.
I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is that our histories, and even when Elena was speaking in the film, sometimes she would get not confused, but she would use the word "us" regardless. And that's something that I also do. And I'm about to do the same thing. I'm going to say "us" regardless. When it comes to us, I'll let you figure out which us. We tend to perceive our histories as stories. We tend to perceive our histories as folklore. That's how I learned the history of Eritrea, the history of Ethiopia, the history of Somalia, and so on and so on. Just like as anecdotes told a little bit, with true historical fact, memories that, were passed on through generations. And of course, you don't validate that too much. You don't see it in a book. You don't see it in a film like Daphne's film. There's no, the folklore has value. I come from folk music. So then for me, folklore has value, but we all know what that does, what that word does, represents in our brains. So that passage is very important. Whenever we say, we think of history, culture, art, science, we always refer to Europe or to the Western world, to the global north, always. Whatever has value is there. It comes from there. Even if you don't study in the global north, the point of view is typically that. And so to switch that, that's why I was talking earlier about dismantling the archive. That's what it means, right? To do the work that it takes to look at history through different eyes, even though a lot of times when we talk about colonialism, the material that we have comes from the global north. When I go to archives and I look at pictures, postcards, those were produced by Italians, Europeans, and that has meaning. But I have to be able, I have to do the work to look to that material and find my people's history, the other people, not the Italians. And that is it's a work that comes with a lot of emotions, feelings, traumas, but also a lot of fun. I enjoy that very much. And God knows, there's a lot of stories that we'll never find out about, right? A lot of people don't have names, but they're there, and we have to find ways to honor those stories, make them official as much as possible, and, use techniques, ideas, creativity, critical fabulations, which is obviously not something that I came up with, but it's something that I enjoy very much because it gives me the power to do some of the work that I do alongside a lot of other people. There's a lot of power in this type of work. And I believe it's just the beginning.
Thank you.
I think that we also have to say that often when we have these conversations about decolonizing history, we are talking of, how we feel, you know, what was it like to not have representation. But I think that it's really important to talk about the fact that I can do, Medina and I and people in the Afro-Italian or Afro-European community can be doing this work over and over again, and we will enjoy it and it will enrich us and it will be important for our identities, but it's not enough because that same work needs to be done by all our fellow citizens. I didn't do a model only for Afro-Italian kids. I did it for every single kid in that country because every single kid needs to understand what that Italian person that is part of their history looks like and what, you know, the whole range of diversity within Italian history looks like. So the responsibility has to be shared. It cannot be put only on people of a certain community. And I think especially today, with everything that has been happening, even just in the last few weeks, it's even more important. We can't keep on asking communities that have had to justify themselves for their whole existence to keep on doing that. It's just not sustainable.
That brings up a really interesting question. This is going to be my last question before we open the floor to the audience, but you're both mentioning this really important work of, and I was curious about, you talked about folklore, Medine, you talked about sort of popular culture and the different stories that that tells, but it also made me think about different myths that are in circulation, in particularly in Italian culture related to the Italy's colonial project. And one myth I'm referring to is that of Italiani brava gente, or Italians as good people, Italians as good colonizers. There is a myth that surrounds Italian colonialism as being something of colonialism light, where it wasn't as brutal or bloody in comparison to the French or the British. We know this is not true. Even in the film, there was a mention of the use of chemical gas, right? Chemical weapons. Another myth that pervades sort of Italian culture is also this idea that Italy is colorblind and race, you know, race doesn't exist and so on. So I was wondering how you, if you ran up against any of these myths while you were making your films, and if so, how you grappled with them.
How much time do we have? I mean, that's been my life since forever. It's almost daily, you know. I am of Eritrean descent. I go around with this body, and for some reason that, I mean, the reasons you just mentioned, when people see, when white Italians or Italians of Italian descent see people like me, it's something that happens in their brain, you know, that they make connections they don't even know where they come from. That's my personal opinion. Maybe I'm wrong, because certain things, certain comments come out of the mouth that I can't explain otherwise. You know, the compliments that come out are clearly it's like they're straight out of propaganda from those times. So certain images, especially around the woman's body of the Horn of Africa, certain that imagery stayed, and that relationship, that unbalanced relationship, also stayed. You know, and I see it. I see it in all kinds of people, but oftentimes I see it in political parties that are not supposed to think in these ways. They're supposed to be a tiny bit more evolved, and yet they don't even recognize that their gaze really come from that legacy. Yeah, when it comes, you know, there's a lot that has been left behind from the Italian times. As we all know, Eritrea has been colonized or occupied and or occupied at different times by different groups, from the Ottoman Empire to the British. But Italians are the ones that stuck to a point. And I don't know, the whys can be multiple, but I feel like the intention that the Italians had of building an empire is probably one of the reasons, because they went, and it's true that they built schools and buildings and hospitals and all that. Yes, they did. See, this is where I say they. See how I switch? I keep my distance. All of that was supposed to be for the Italians, not for the people there. In fact, we also saw how they built a separation, a physical separation, right? And created a sort of apartheid in the main city, where Black people could not cross a certain border. And that area of Asmara was called Comistato, from the Italian Campo Cintato, right? You translate that in English. I am absolutely sure I did not answer your question, but I needed to say these things.
Thank you.
And that also relates, there's this thread that kind of takes us to today. Because there's this persistence on not wanting to talk about it, because Italiani brava gente, right? And it's so problematic, even in the younger generations, because if we could just accept that at some point in our life, we've all been racist, even, and I'm talking about myself, I'm talking about moments where I wasn't aware, my knowledge wasn't where it needed to be. I needed to realize things about myself. If we could just accept this and build on it and deconstruct from it, we would be in such a different position. Colonialism in Italy, the fact that colonialism in Italy never died is a fact. Today, yesterday, the day before, when I open the news and I see fascists marching in Bologna next to my home, and I see the police taking orders from them. And when the government allows fascists to march in Italian cities untouched, but when students protest peacefully, they get beaten by the police. And whenever somebody looks towards the people in power and reminds them that fascism is still anti-constitutional, all they get is attacks and lost jobs and salaries halved. It is so common in Italy for people of African descent to have a parent that is a fascist, myself included. And it is the weirdest dichotomy, because here's this person that is 50% of you and that, birthed you. But they'll still marry those ideas and not see why, in what way, they are problematic for you, and in what way those ideas are a statement against your own existence. And this is like very easily explained with what colonialism, how colonialism is still underlying in the culture. And until it's going to be talked about and faced, until we're going to be able and willing to work through it, this is going to be the situation.
Thank you. With that, I'd like to open the floor if there are any questions from the audience.
Thank you. Hi, good evening.
Hi.
Ciao, Daphne. Ciao, Medina. I'm so glad to be here with you guys tonight, even if it's very late. And so I'm I really enjoyed your movies. And Medina, I saw your movie back in the day in Naples at the University of Naples.
Oh, really?
But
Cool.
it was based before moving to the US. And it was, I remember it was a huge success.
And look,
was...
now we're both in the US. That is strange.
And also, Daphne, your movie received many accolades as well. So, and I think that this movie, you know, I heard, you know, these movies are not related at all. And instead, I think that the quotation by Walter Benjamin in the movie as Marina actually is a great way to put these two movies in conversation that seem to be far away, you know, apparently far away from each other. Esiste un appuntamento misterioso tra le generazioni passate? E la nostra, I wrote it down. Noi siamo attesi sulla terra. So this quotation somehow, you know, puts in conversation generations past and present. So there's this haunting, you know, meeting point between generations. So somehow between Black Italians back in the Renaissance with the new communities of Black Italians in contemporary Italy. So my question is more, it's more of a curiosity actually that deals with the cinematographic language that you chose to represent certain aspects of Italian history that have, that actually nowadays, you know, we have more conversation about this untold stories, but I'm more curious, you know, about your choice. So a documentary in the case of Asmarina and a short movie in the case of Il Moro. So is there any specific choice behind this genres, these styles? How did you decide these genres? Thank you.
You first.
Thank you. Well, personally, as a filmmaker, the thing that interests me the most is people. It is their emotions. It is how they feel when they face a challenge and how they're gonna work through it. So when I came across the story of Alessandro and I decided that I wanted to tell it, that was my first, it's the thing that I put in the forefront. So when writing, I just wanted the person to come through before anything. I didn't think that it was my place as a filmmaker to, you know, tell you the chronological order of Alessandro's life and, you know, when it is that he became Duke and, you know, when it is that he was murdered. I wanted you to feel him and I wanted you to see him. And in my opinion, fiction allows that because it allows me to stop in those moments that are deep and intense and difficult and uncomfortable. And even more so, my movie, yes, is the story about Alessandro de' Medici, but, you know, those conversations are also the conversations that we have with the country we call home, with the country that birthed us. And I wanted to be able to have that metaphor and create that parallel. So in my case, fiction was the best genre, well, more than genre, well, the best medium I could use to have all the conversations that I wanted to have and to put up all the images that I wanted to put up.
For me, I am, I guess, mainly an activist, or that at least that's how I see myself, that the work I've done over the years is that's the center of it. And typically, depending on what I'm working on, I go towards a specific medium. I have a past in folk electronic music and photography. Film came specifically because of Asmarina, because when I started telling the story of a whole community or communities, photography was not enough, a still image was not enough, but I needed to see people movement, people the body communication, I needed to hear accents, and music on top of that helped me a lot to tell different layers of this story. So in a nutshell, that's it. And just to comment on the Walter Benjamin's quote, there's a few ways to read that, to interpret that. For me, that talks to the feeling of disconnection that a lot of kids of immigrant feel, when you potentially could feel as an outsider in the community of your family, or in the community you're growing up, you know, where you're born and raised. And then the work that you have to do to build your own identity and to feel included, to find your own space and to learn and understand and feel like that space in between, it really is a valid space, and a valid, your experience is valid as it is. To me, that quote spoke to that experience.
Thank you.
Well, thank you all. We are just out of time here, so I'd like to really thank our filmmakers, Medine and Daphne, for joining us today and for really elevating our conversation around these issues. And thank you again to the team at the Carsey Wolf Center, and thanks to all of you in the audience tonight.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.